I got a phone call from the head of beverages for the America's Cup, and she basically said, we've deliberated and we've selected the beverages that are going to represent New Zealand at the America's Cup, and we've chosen four alcoholic companies and two non-alcoholic companies. The two non-alcoholic companies are going to be Coke and yourselves. And I was like, what the fudge?
Joe Harawira, the co-founder of the premium non-alcoholic beverage Waimanuka. The entrepreneur takes us through the ups and downs of starting and running a beverage business.
And what are the challenges that you've faced growing a business?
It's relentless. It will push you beyond what you thought was capable. Mm. So you think about the toll sort of mentally, emotionally, spiritually even. Like there's been a few times where I've had to say karakia.
Yeah.
You really got to ask yourself, what are you prepared to sacrifice to see this business or this venture succeed, and know that it's going to take more than what you think it's going to need.
This is the Fresh Money Podcast.
74% of Pacifica, 56% of Māori feel unconfident or unsure when making financial decisions. This podcast is all about opening up the conversation of money and to help everyone get better at it. So if you can please like and subscribe, it's our promise to interview more people who can help and inspire you to become better with money. Please note that this podcast does not constitute financial advice. If you are needing financial advice, please consult a professional or get in touch and we can point you in the right direction. Talo Flava, I'm Willie Liotta, and welcome to the Fresh Money Podcast. On this podcast, we discuss all things money, from personal finance, business, and investment. If it involves money, we'll be talking about it. And I'm super stoked to be welcoming today our guest, Joe Harawira. Joe, welcome to Fresh Money. It's an honour to have you here. Thank you so much for your time. Why don't we start off, why don't we kick off by you introducing yourself and what it is you do.
Kia ora, talofalava, ko Joe Harawira Takuingua, ko Ngāti Awa me Ngāti Rangi Ngā Iwi no Whakatāne Ahau. Kia ora Willie, my name is Joe Harawira and I'm a co-founder and the chief executive of Waimanuka, which is New Zealand's premium non-alcoholic beverage that infuses manuka honey with raw lemon juice and sparkling water. Tēnā koe.
Tēnā koe. Mean. Bro, why manuka? How long has that business been going for? When did you start that?
Waimanuka's been running now for just over 3.5 years. And the genesis for it was a New Year's Eve party. So it was an idea between myself and two good friends from Whakatāne where we catch up kind of sporadically throughout the year, and we just so happened to be together at New Year's Eve. And that New Year's Eve in Whakatāne, which is 2019 going into 2020, well, for me, I hardly ever drink alcohol, and that night I had pineapple kombucha, and I was bitterly disappointed because it tasted like pineapple. And then I remember leaning over to the boys, Wayne and Lance, and I was just like, bro, this tastes nothing like what it should taste like. Somebody needs to make a better premium non-alcoholic beverage to take to occasions. And then it was about 3 a.m, we landed on the concept of combining manuka honey with water and creating like an export product or a brand. That was the the origin story, really. And then New Year's Day, actually, the 1st of January 2020, did a bit of desktop research and found out that no one was actually making a premium manuka honey beverage. So called the boys up and was like, bros, this is us. And we got onto it.
No way. Mean. We'll come back to that. But have you always been an entrepreneur? Tell me a bit about your kind of career. Where did you start in the workforce?
Yeah, so I left Whakatāne at a young age and to serve in the military. So I'm ex-army, where I served for the 1st Battalion Royal New Zealand Infantry Regiment in various specialist sort of combat roles. After achieving sort of, I guess, my goals within the military, I've always had a passion for health and fitness. Yeah. I went to university in Palmerston North, and I did an undergrad in
exercise. I know Palmy.
You know Palmy?
Yes. Do you? Yes, yeah. Born and raised Palmy. Yeah.
Oh, Palmy, I love it. I'll always always have a special place in my heart for Palmerston North.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So I did an undergrad in sports science, and then I did postgrad in project management. Then I went on to an executive MBA. And then after that, I ended up working for the NRL in the athlete wellness space. True. So basically I was helping athletes and their family transition into the NRL pathway. And then, you know, I did that for 3 years, and then I ended up working for New Zealand Rugby after that for 5 years.
Yeah.
But the seed for entrepreneurship and innovation, that was initially planted in 2011
when
We went on an international study tour of the US, and we, as an MBA class.
Oh, and your studies?
Yep. And we spent some time in Silicon Valley with two companies, IDEO, which is a global design innovation company, and Google. And it was at that point where I learned and I met people who had come up with a vision, had brought that vision to life, and now we're dominating sort of the market within their respective fields. So
yeah.
I would say the seed for entrepreneurship and innovation was planted back in 2011, It took a decade for it to manifest into Waimanuku.
Wicked. So what actually, you know, you have this idea, New Year's Eve. What actually made you decide to, you know, obviously you kind of did a bit of research. There was nothing like that in the market. What actually made you decide to start making something that was a drink? Like, where do you start? Like, I can have an idea. Oh, man, I reckon we should make a drink. But then where do you even begin?
Yeah, I think for us at the time, it was it came down to probably three things. Like, the first one, we wanted, myself and my two good mates, Lance and Wayne, we wanted a reason to stay more connected as bros, because we found that as we were getting older, we caught up sort of less and less, and this would give us the opportunity to do that. Secondly, we were passionate about creating something that sort of celebrated our culture and New Zealand heritage, and it was able to leverage off the global reputation that Manuka Honey has. Mm. So we knew there was a global market for it. And then thirdly, it was to solve that immediate problem of consumers not having a premium non-alcoholic choice to elevate the occasion when they go to events or celebrations. So those were the sort of three reasons as to why we started.
Yep.
In terms of the when, I think that's a big part of the backstory too, because in March 2020, that's when lockdown hit. And Jacinda gave us time to go get back home, and I was living in Wellington at the time.
Oh, okay.
I moved back to Whakatane for that lockdown period.
Sweet.
Well, that lockdown period actually gave us the time and space to build the business and develop the recipe and meet with the right people who could help sort of support our sort of vision. So that lockdown really served as an incubator to bring the product to life.
So it gave you time to talk about it, research, strategize. The whole works about creating, starting a business.
Yeah, exactly. And I think with the beverage technician and the manufacturing company, the design company, because the whole country was in lockdown, people seemed to have the time to work on it.
Yeah.
So we
Because like when you say, you know, did you say what, the beverage manufacturer? Is that what you said?
Yes, yeah, the beverage
manufacturer. Like, where do you even find, how do you know to go to those guys?
Oh.
Or is it just Google or...?
No, it actually came down through our network. So Massey, which is where I studied, I was lucky to have a relationship with the Food Innovation Network. And I'd reached out to the chief executive recommended a beverage technician who could make Waimanuka. And it just so happened that beverage technician had relocated with her family from the UK back to New Zealand for lockdown, like just before it all sort of kicked off.
And so, random.
She was looking for projects to work on, and we gave her the first project back in New Zealand when she relocated. So that's how it all sort of happened. And then she connected us with the beverage manufacturer. I linked in with a creative design agency, reached out to a local tamoko artist to help with our Māori iconography.
Yeah,
because it was really important to us that our values are woven into the brand story, because that's a big part of what Waimanuka is and who it represents.
Yeah. And how long did it take from ideation or, you know, getting the idea to actually creating something and then having it in a bottle ready to go?
This is where the story gets pretty trippy, man. Like, so we were making it throughout lockdown, everything. And then halfway through lockdown, one of our mentors forwarded an expression of interest for beverage supplies to the America's Cup. So later on that year, America's Cup, the yacht race was going to be in Auckland. He forwarded the expression of interest on, and he basically said in his email, well, all he said in the email was, hey, guys, just wanted to share this with you. It's an example of the opportunities for beverages. Way too soon for you boys, but FYI. And we had a look at the expression of interest as to what the beverage company from America's Cup were looking for. And we were reading sort of the celebration of New Zealand culture, whanaunatanga, which is all about connection and relationships, kaitiakitanga, looking after the environment. I was like, bro, this is like 100% Waimanuka. We got to be in. Got to be in here. So we submitted our application. Didn't think too much of it because at that stage we hadn't actually made the physical product. We'd booked in a run, but we didn't have a finished product. Anyway,
No.
They invited us to a panel interview, and so I did the panel interview for us, and I was pretty nervous. No, because none of us come from the beverage making industry. You know, small town boys from Whakatane. You don't go to school in Whakatane with aspirations of creating a global non-alcoholic beverage and partnering America's Cup. That's just not on the cards.
Yeah, true.
So, yeah, did the panel interview. Didn't think too much of it. Actually thought we bombed it. And then 2 weeks later, I got a phone call from the head of beverages for the America's Cup, and she basically said, you know, we've deliberated and we've selected the beverages that are going to represent New Zealand at the America's Cup, and we've chosen 4 alcoholic companies and 2 non-alcoholic companies. The 2 non-alcoholic companies are going to be Coke and yourselves. And I was like, what the fuck?
No way.
Bro, so that was our That's surreal crazy. Launch to market was the America's Cup.
You didn't have a bottle.
Yeah, and the thing is, I'm not meant to tell anyone that we hadn't made the product yet, because America's Cup today, you sign this thing and then
you have a product.
Okay, done. And now we've told everyone. So we'll probably never supply America's Cup again.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yep.
That's amazing.
So that was the launch to market, and what took it to another level. So that was the end of 2020. Yep. And what took Waimanuka to the next level was we did a story for 7Sharp.
Okay.
So it just happened to email Siren Sharp off the back of this exciting news from America's Cup. And
yeah, cool.
Like, oh, hey, we just won the contract to supply America's Cup alongside Coke, and we've never made a beverage and we're from Pakistan. They replied that afternoon and we're like, can we run a story on you? Are you available tomorrow? And so they sent Lucas Dijon, he's a great guy, to Whakatane, and he interviewed us and pulled together a story. At the end of that year, so 2020, that 7Sharp story had over 300,000 views. Like, this is less than 6 weeks.
It's insane.
And it was the second most viewed story of the year for 7Sharp, second only to Jacinda Ardern's acceptance speech for when she became Prime Minister. So that was our launch to market.
Wowzers. Yeah. Sheesh. So then so what happened after that? Were you hustling to get a product ready? Was the pressure on? Because obviously when opportunities come, it's like, let's go.
Yep.
And then you're like, oh, now we have to do all the work to meet that expectation.
Yeah. Well, at the time that
did you have plenty of time?
Yeah. At the time that I did the panel interview, we hadn't actually made the physical product, but it was in the pipeline.
Oh, okay.
And so by the time they came back to us and said, yep, you're selected, that's you, I was like, oh, my goodness, thank God, because we've just done a production run, the initial one.
Wow.
So, we ended up supplying our one small cafe, which is Iwi-owned in Whakatane, and America's Cup, and that was the 2 accounts that we opened up with at the end of 2020. Bro, so
crazy.
That's nuts to think about now. It feels like it's so long ago because so much has happened.
Yeah. So with that initial one, is it basically a contract going, hey, we need this many units to supply the America's Cup event? Is that how it works?
Yep. So they needed X amount of units to supply the – they had a big sort of staging area where all the fans could experience the racing in there down on the waterfront in the viaduct, and they had sectioned it all off and had bars there. So they're selling Waimanuka in there alongside all of the Coke products.
Yeah, cool.
That was our initial launch.
Just a small one?
Yeah, it's really, it's so surreal to think back on because, you know, at New Year's Eve it was an idea and none of us came from the beverage making industry. We made it throughout a global pandemic and then launched as a partner to one of the biggest and oldest and most prestigious sporting events in the world. Like, how does that even happen?
That's epic. That is epic.
I don't even know how that happens.
What do you think that comes down to? Is it a bit of luck, or is it you being prepared? Is it the pitch? Is it your risk-taking, I suppose?
I think it's a whole – it's a combination of things.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, there's like a growing global demand for non-alcoholic beverages. Mm. And that's being pushed up by Gen Z and millennials, so young ones who are like us.
Yeah.
I like you, not
me. Yeah.
So young ones who are coming through who are wanting to align with brands that reflect their values, and their values are personal health and the health of the planet. So I think there's a massive opportunity in terms of the demand for non-alcoholic beverages. At the same time, America's Cup, they were looking for brands that were authentically New Zealand,
cool,
and that celebrated New Zealand heritage and culture.
Yeah.
You throw into the mix using natural ingredients, Manuka honey, which is, you know, undoubtedly a superfood, raw lemon juice and sparkling water. That's a pretty powerful combination when you bring it all together.
Yeah, big time.
So I think because of the timing, the global demand and what America's Cup were looking for, it all really played into our favour.
Yeah,
Yeah. And I'd say probably one of the challenges at the back of that is that we probably haven't capitalised on it as well as we could have, looking back now.
Okay.
But you're always going to be harsher on yourself looking
back. Yes, yeah. You have 20/20 vision and
exactly
reflection, eh?
Yeah.
Mean, so if we look at financing a business like this, how does that work? Is it, is it kind of bootstrapping from the start? Like, do you employ people straight away, or is it?
No, you're bootstrapping and you're borrowing.
Yeah. So you're using your own money from your own pocket.
Yeah. So you're. It is really tough. Yep. So, to give context, the FMCG, so fast moving consumable goods, beverage industry in particular, it is a high risk industry, 70% of the global market share is owned by just two companies.
Yeah.
And with that, if you look at New Zealand in terms of geography, we're a long way away from some of the bigger markets to access. So it's expensive to make and it's expensive to move. At the same time, because we weren't a validated product or brand, we had to bootstrap it and we had to borrow. So we used our savings, borrowed from our family and whānau and from banks to get this up and going to validate the business. And we're still at that stage now of just sort of transitioning from a startup into a growth stage. And what I would say is that it actually doesn't get easier. You
know,
as you bring on more capital and you're wanting to grow, there's an increased level of sort of complexity. You might have other shareholders on board, which again adds another dynamic to it. And as such, there's just a greater risk. So for those sort of startups out there, don't think that it's going to get easier because as you grow, it becomes more expensive.
Yeah.
Particularly for when you're dealing with consumer packaged goods.
Yeah. Crazy. And what are some of the challenges that you've faced growing a business?
Probably the main one is it's relentless.
Yep.
So it will push you beyond what you thought was capable.
Mm.
So you think about the toll sort of mentally, emotionally, spiritually even. Like there's been a few times where I've had to say karakia.
As well
as physically. All of those kind of characteristics play into the business because you've invested so much of your time and energy into it and you believe in this thing.
Yeah.
That you're willing to go the extra mile. And, you know, what I would say is that you have to keep pushing through different levels. So once you get to a certain level of where you think your ceiling is, there's another level that's waiting for you to step up to, and it keeps going. I'm pretty fortunate in I guess my circumstances, because having a career in the military and working in professional sports with the NRL and New Zealand rugby, I'm familiar somewhat with pressure-driven environments. So a lot of that around kind of resilience and resourcefulness and adaptability has sort of served me well in dealing with the challenges that come with Waimanuka. But it's it's never ending, I would say, and there's no off switch. And what does become important as a business owner, particularly when you're, so I'm the only full-time FTE, and so you know, naturally juggling a fair bit, is that you've just got to be very, you've got to be super focused on the tasks that are most critical. And so those tasks are where you want to spend all of your time and energy, and everything kind of peripheral to those tasks, you've just got to relegate to background noise.
Yeah. Is it easy to get distracted?
Super easy. Like, and I'm not just referring to internal kind of business distractions, but it could be scrolling on social media, watching Netflix, spending time with mates when you know you could have been working on your forecasts, that kind of a thing. So you've really got to ask yourself, what are you prepared to sacrifice to see this business or this venture succeed, and know that it's going to take more than what you think it's going to take?
What are the tasks that you have to stay focused on for the business?
Managing costs and growth are the main ones. So at the moment we're going through a capital raise process. So we're bringing on sort of external investment that will help us achieve two things. So one, we want to scale across New Zealand. And we want to employ a distributor who can, I guess, manage the heavy lifting to enable me to focus on those export opportunities. And then second to that, we want to validate an export market. So it's all around growth, it's all around investment, and it's all around cost savings.
How important is timing around manufacturing? Like from, you know, obviously ordering. So, 'cause is that how it works? You basically have to have cash to order a manufacturer to start, you know, creating bottles of product, Waimanuka. And then you have to get them off the shelf and sell them. And is that when the money comes back, and then you kind of, is that the cycle?
That's a great question.
Is it the rough, they call it cash flow cycle. Is that kind of, is that how it works?
Yeah, that's a great question, because where we get stung as a small business, so at the moment we're doing our minimum order quantities, so low volumes, because we don't quite have the demand.
I see.
Therefore, we don't have economies of scale, so we can't sort of command a better price point for the inputs that we purchase. So we would do a production run, and we'd spend the next 4 months paying that run off, as well as managing ongoing costs, operating costs, and so forth. And this is the whole reason why we need to bring on external investment, so that we can increase our production runs, test in new markets, drive down the overall cost of making Waimanuka to enable the business to grow. But you know, one cool initiative, and that'd be worth reaching out on to come on here potentially, is Taxi, they're called. They're relatively new. I'm going to meet with them tomorrow. But what they are is they're essentially an overdraft facility where you pay your provisional tax into this platform, and then you can access the overdraft as that provisional tax builds up at a lower rate than what you would from, say, a commercial bank. And there's a lot less admin. So it would give you that sort of working capital to bridge the gap between when you do a production run and when you convert it as a sale at the other end. Because it could be like, for us, there's probably about a 3-month kind of a gap of like, holy heck, how do we get through this? You know, we've got customer invoices coming in for this production run that, you know. But it's gnarly. Like you're juggling growth, and it's expensive to grow. You're trying to control your working capital and your cash flow and that. And at the same time, you're putting on a brave face when you're talking to investors about this exciting opportunity that exists to disrupt the market on a global level.
True. How have you had to change as a business as a leader, as you've gone through this journey with Waimanuka?
Yeah, I think I've changed in many ways in terms of my leadership. I'm probably a lot more, assertive now than what I have been. And I would even go as far as saying that Waimanuka at times has been harder in terms of the mental and emotional challenge than some of the challenges I faced in the military.
Yeah,
you know, so that gives sort of listeners an indication of what they're in for from that kind of emotional, sort of mental standpoint,
yep.
Because your body physiologically doesn't know the difference between stress. You know, you could be operating in a foreign environment, yep. And it could be a threat to life. But your body doesn't know the difference from stress. So, I would say that I've become a lot more sort of resilient in terms of my mental toughness as a result of that. And because I'm juggling so much, I feel like I'm become a lot better at sort of focusing on the critical few things that can drive the business forward as opposed to spreading myself too thin. Mm. And it's really hard because like a big part of my own sort of personal values set is around whanaunatanga, so relationships and connection.
Yes.
So I've just got to make sure that whenever I have an interaction with someone, and even though it's not going to lead to anything sort of business related, it's important for me to leave that interaction with sort of mana intact kind of a thing, even if it just means giving someone the time.
Yeah.
So that's something that I've had to juggle with on a personal level. But yeah, it's in terms of some of the things that I've been able to sort of develop over the last few years, it's around resilience, adaptability, and resourcefulness, those same characteristics that I learned in the military.
Man. What gets you through those darker days?
So, yeah, as I was saying, I'm really, really big on sort of personal well-being, so I kind of protect my sleep if I can. I 7 hours is generally a good number for me, and I find that if anything less than that, then the quality of my work output sort of diminishes over the long term. So I sort of try and protect that sleep, and that means that I shut down my phone at sort of 9 o'clock at night sort of a thing, so I can give my mind the chance to sort of wind down. Sometimes not possible.
Yeah.
So that's one sort of pillar is around the quality of sleep. The other one is I eat pretty well. So I eat mostly whole foods and kind of limit sort of takeaways or refined sugars. I do have a sweet tooth though, so I'm always looking for alternatives. I love sort of exercising. That's kind of my out and sort of stress release.
Nice.
So build up a lot of stress with some of the things you're dealing with. You know, in business, I'm able to kind of like let that go through my own sort of personal training and that. And then extending beyond that is like sort of like the important kind of social relationships that I have with like sort of family and friends, and that I keep my circle pretty tight.
Wicked. Yeah. So on that, is there such a thing when you go into business as a work-life balance?
No, not in the early stages. That's a foreign concept to me. I would say that you've got to merge the two. So work and your life is effectively merged, especially for those first few years. For me, there is no off switch at the minute. We're just in that stage of growth where it requires most of my time and energy. Mm. I know when I need to chop out for a few hours or even half a day, that's probably the most I'm mentally going to most I'm going to like be away from thinking about the business or doing anything. But yeah, there's no, if you want work-life balance, then you need to go and work for someone.
Get a salary wage.
Yeah. So it doesn't exist in running a business, particularly for the first few years.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. What advice would you give to someone who has this burning idea, this passion to create a business, you know, either a product or a service? What advice would you give them?
It's a great question, and the reason being is over the last, I'm going to say 12 months or so, I've had quite a few friends within my sort of circle reach out wanting to pursue business ideas.
Cool.
And my response, and it's probably like becoming a bit of a cynic, I guess, but my response to them, like they sit opposite me and like they're all wide-eyed and talking about this great idea, and I was like, yeah, that sounds really great, and I'm really happy for you, and I'm here to support you, but you've just got to ask yourself the question, are you prepared to like not pay yourself a wage for the first few years? Can you burn through all of your savings? Are you prepared to borrow from banks and friends and family? And you might even have to sell the house. That could be an option later on. So we can answer those four questions sort of confidently, then by all means, you're ready for the next step, but I'm just sharing the realities with you. at the same time, it's the most rewarding sort of journey you can be on. You can sort of it's the most rewarding journey actually to be on, because it tests you in so many different ways, and then it opens you up to new networks, and you meet people that you otherwise would never have associated with. And the whole notion around having this vision and bringing it to life and people actually loving what this is like, that's a massive driver.
Epic.
I think you're either an entrepreneur or you're not. And okay. whether or not you find that idea or that pursuit that can bring that, that can surface that, then, you know, will determine whether or not you leave behind a job security and as such to follow a passion. Yeah.
Is there a time that you should? Like, is there anything you should do before going full in into a business? Or can you really prepare for it?
I don't know if I'm the best person to answer this question, mainly because I'm also the eternal optimist. And, you know, when I look at New Zealand on the whole, so we're fortunate enough to live in one of the most progressive countries in the world to start a business. So for me, that is like the green light to say, just go in and give it everything and see what happens. So, I'm probably – I'm just going to tell people to – I'll canvas it with some of the risks.
Yeah, cool.
But, like, ultimately, man, we live in a country that provides so much support for us. And when you're directing all of your energy towards something that you're passionate about and that you believe in, then you tend to find other people who gravitate towards that.
Mm.
And that gives you kind of that inspiration, I guess, that energy, that drive to keep going. It's there, but you've just got to keep going. And, you know, the other tough thing too is that not every conversation or interaction that you're going to have is going to amount to anything, and it's important not to get disheartened by that.
So you
might have, I don't know, 10 or so different engagements, and 8 of them might lead to nowhere, and you might think that's a waste of time. Well, the actual fact, you just need to keep going. That's it is hard. But you've just got to keep on putting a brave face on and keep going hard, and then you'll find the people that your product and your brand resonates with.
Man. Yeah. How do you keep going after, you know, a number of people saying no?
I love it when people say no.
Is that something you'd had to not get used to, but in a certain way get used to?
You know, I've only been in the industry for 3.5 years, and for the last 12 months or so, I've been sort of working on a capital raise, and I've presented to a number of different investor groups around the country, sort of a thing. What I would say of all of the investors that I've met, there's really not a lot of people that know much about growing a global beverage brand in New Zealand, let alone how to invest in them. So that's something to bear in mind, is there's actually not a lot of people in there who are around, particularly in New Zealand, who know a lot about this industry.
Because you have to fight the right investor as well, eh? Because not only are they going to bring their money, but some expertise and networks to push the brand and the product forward.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's really important that this investor is shares the same sort of vision and values, but more importantly can connect us to a network that can unlock future investing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the goal, is to get through this initial capital raise and then work towards a Series A.
And what's a Series A?
Sorry. So Series A is where we'd be big enough to attract the likes of a multinational or a private equity company.
Oh,
so
I see.
Essentially, I see. So if we were to get investment on today, what we would do is set a time frame of like 18 months to 2 years, and within that time we'd scale across New Zealand and we'd validate an export market. At the end of that time frame, you'd be able to go to a private equity or multinational and say, this is what we achieved in these two markets with this investment. Let's talk about what it looks like when we replicate in 10 or so different cities, I'm going to say, around the world, because you know, Waimanuka is not a product that's going to be available everywhere, but if you targeted key cities within target countries, then you'll probably do well.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. In terms of Series A, how much of the company would you be giving away or selling, like a percentage of the company, would you, don't have to give exact or roughly,
yeah,
would you be giving to an investor at that stage of raising funds? Yeah.
I still haven't worked out what we're going to be giving away for the initial raising. So, in terms of the Series A, what we'd be gunning for really, though, is a strategic partnership. Say if it was the likes of a, who's a big brand, say a PepsiCo or a Coke, because they have the infrastructure and the supply chain to enable more people to experience Waimānuka around the world than what we could by ourselves, then that would look really great from a strategic partnership point of view, because we've tied so much of our culture into the brand that you couldn't just sell the whole company to a foreign investor or a foreign company. It would need to have some sort of quality assurance, particularly around the brand values, to make sure that that's still connected to Aotearoa, which will always be home for Waimānuka.
Yeah.
So initial capital raise, still, that's kind of, we know what we need.
Yep.
It depends, I guess it's in the eye of the investor as to what they value the company and what we're prepared to give away in terms of equity. Series A would be negotiating for a strategic partnership with a big player.
Yeah, main.
Yep.
Main. So what are the other roles that your good friends play in the business?
Yeah. Yep, so we started the business off with, we started with three. There was myself, Wayne, and Lance. Lance exited the biggest business in late 2022.
Okay.
And what I would say to that is that business isn't for everyone. And so at the end of the day, Lance decided to focus on his day job.
Yeah, cool.
So he's doing that. And Wayne is my other business partner. He is still a full-time teacher.
Nice.
And he just sort of supports in kind of sort of operational tasks outside of schooling. So I think one of the keys for getting investment, one of the key things we want to do with getting this initial capital raise done is it'll be great to, I guess, maybe find a managing director for New Zealand allow me to focus on kind of those global opportunities, because, you know, in 5 years' time, we have a goal of 90% of our total revenue is going to be driven by exports.
Yeah, wow.
New Zealand's a great country to test and learn, but you don't want to, for a brand like Waimānuka, which is a premium non-alcoholic, you don't want to spend too much time here, because the market's too small. There's not enough people and there's not enough sort of capital.
Mm.
So it's important that we have enough to sort of create that recurring revenue and a baseline gross margin. And then we invest everything else into the export opportunities where there's like a lot more growth.
Yeah, cool. What's the plan for the next 3-5 years and further? What's the hopes and dreams for Waimānuka?
Yeah, I think the philosophical one would be, I'd love to think that no matter, do you know, like I do a lot of international travel, and there's nothing quite like being in a terminal, say like, I don't know, New York or Heathrow or whatever, and looking out onto the tarmac and you see like an Air New Zealand plane, and you just feel like, well, that's home.
Yeah, big time.
So the philosophical goal for Waimānuka would be, no matter where in the world you might be as a Kiwi, when you see Waimānuka, you feel a deep sense of connection and pride, because you know that that's come from home.
Nice.
And at the same time, if you're non-Kiwi, then that's almost like your opportunity to have something that, it represents Aotearoa in a bottle, you know. So that's kind of the philosophical goal that we'd love to achieve, to create an iconic brand that's based off our values and that resonates with a global consumer.
Yeah, wicked. Like, I totally get that. When I was in the UK for a couple of years, every time I would hear a Kiwi accent or see an Air New Zealand plane kind of flying in into Heathrow, I'd be like, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you'd have that instant connection and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm Kiwi.
Yeah,
Kiwi.
Totally, Kiwi. Man. And the New Zealand kind of brand values, they are so powerful. Like everyone looks to New Zealand for, like, you know, it's kind of premium, natural, cultural. These types of kind of characteristics are what sort of separates us from almost every other sort of market. So these are the things where, as a small business, you can leverage on when you get your communication right, and as long as that it sort of resonates with consumer preferences in that market.
Yep.
Like when I think about Waimanuka, for example, it has multiple value propositions. So, and those value propositions are, you know, there's Manuka honey, which is a wellness effect. There is the use of natural ingredients to make it. There's the weaving in of Māori culture. There's the pure New Zealand brand. The non-alcoholic occasion-based beverage. There's the functional beverage when you bring it all together. So depending on what kind of message works with a particular consumer in that market, you can actually tailor your communications to so that it resonates more with them, and you can cut through all of the noise, because that's what you're trying to do when you're marketing a product.
Yeah. True. I mean, let's go back to you growing up.
Yeah.
Finances and personal finances. Was that something that you guys as a family, as a whānau, talked about money? Was that a norm, or was it not a thing?
No, well, I grew up with a so we were a small whānau for a Māori family. So there's just myself and my an older sister.
Oh, man.
And then mum and dad. We lost dad back in 2017.
Oh, sorry.
So both my parents were sort of working class.
Mm.
We didn't have open conversations around sort of finances, but it was something that was always important to mum and dad, because they wanted to make sure that we always had a roof over our head and food on the table type of thing. And I would say kind of later on in my my career within the NRL, where I got to work with young athletes around sort of finances, it's often viewed as a, and this is the same as in Māori culture as what it probably is in Pacifica, is that it's a, kind of people are a bit sort of whakamaa to talk about finances.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, if you say, like, for example, with Waimanuka, first and foremost, it has to make money. You know, if it doesn't make money, then we're not going to be able to give back.
Exactly.
So, and that's kind of like the dilemma, I guess, that we face as a culture, is that so much of us is about kind of the collective and wanting to do something to give back, that we actually negate the fact we need to create something that's viable. So I'd love to think that I could have the opportunity, I guess, to speak to our people around the importance of making sure that we can keep our finances in check and we can build wealth, because that enables us to give back at scale. So it wasn't a subject that was openly discussed.
Yep.
We knew it was important, mainly because we didn't have much.
Yep.
But I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done around kind of changing our perspective, particularly from a Māori and Pacifica point of view, on finances and budgeting and that type of thing. It's okay to make money.
It's okay
to make money.
That's right.
It's a good thing, actually, because it's going to enable you to do more.
Yep. You can do more.
Yeah.
You can help more.
Yeah.
Like, it just accelerates things, right?
Yep.
Of the good work that you want to do.
Yeah. So. Yeah, totally. And at some point, you know, Waimanuka's got to move out of the startup phase of bootstrapping everything and surviving on an oily rag to become a powerhouse if our goal is to partner alongside a multinational.
Yeah.
So that means... Yeah. Money.
That's right. And how do you manage the finances of a business? Is it the same with your personal stuff? Do you have a budget or a forecast for your business as well as your own personal budget?
Yeah, a personal budget for the last, well, since I transitioned into Waimanuka 2 years ago, I'm going to say personal budget has been financed a lot by the bank of mum, which has been great, and I've been so lucky and fortunate to have you.
Respect, mum.
Shout out to mum. Bank of mum. No interest rates too, as long as it's paid back.
Nice.
And as for the business, we sort of operate on forecasts and kind of looking at sort of 3-6 months ahead sort of a thing.
And
but it's such a gnarly time when you look at, I guess, the impact of sort of inflation and the cost of living and even like sort of the global supply chain issues, like forecasts are like, you know, good luck with trying to be on the money with that, because things are just changing so quickly.
That's right.
And probably in general, I think New Zealand entrepreneurs were probably, probably a bit sort of guilty of like overinflating the forecasts based on what our perception of what we think the future should be, when in reality it's going to be a whole lot sort of harder. So,
gotcha.
I have no doubt that banks will have someone sitting in those back offices looking at our forecasts and then just dialing them down to see if we qualify for an overdraft.
We'll take 10% off that.
And saying that is forecasts are really good to enable sort of planning and knowing when roughly we're going to do a production run or when we're going to be really short and things are going to be tight. And it's good practice run to get into for when we do get into exporting bigger runs overseas, because the payment terms could be 60 to 90 days. Yes. So, you know, the biggest difference between sort of scaling, biggest difference between sort of operating in New Zealand and operating in international markets is when you're exporting, so your risks go up threefold. So time frame, costs, everything goes up. So good training opportunity in New Zealand. But we're in a stage now where we're ready for sort of some bigger opportunities now.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Growing up, who did you get financial advice from? Or did you? Is that something you kind of just learned as you went on? Did the army give you some financial advice as well?
It actually didn't. I didn't get really any sort of formal advice until we had one presentation when I first joined the army about a guy who was trying to talk us into buying property. Starting at sort of 19 years of age and building up a property portfolio. Other than that, when I was overseas with the boys, we were on operations, we used to read a lot of books like Rich Dad,
Poor
Dad,
yeah.
Share that amongst ourselves. And so it was kind of like sort of self-directed.
Okay.
And then sort of once I left the military and got into studies, especially the MBA, is the one that sort of opened my eyes up to accounting and finance and that type of thing. And then the international study tour. So, yeah, nothing major throughout my sort of formative years. We had one kind of engagement formally in my military career, self-directed after that, but then hit the ground running with the MBA.
Yeah, hard out. And do you get any support for, I suppose, forecasting, budgeting for the business?
Yes. So we're very fortunate to be we're a focused customer of New Zealand Trade and Enterprise.
Oh, nice.
So what that means is they wrap around a whole lot of support a whole lot of support around Waimanuka to enable it to become a successful exporting company. And with that, we get access to an investment team who have helped out with our investment deck and our forecasts as well. And we need that sort of expert lens across it, particularly when you're dealing with overdraft facilities with the bank to cope with a production run sort of a thing. They're not going to necessarily agree with the forecast you put forward, but it will hold a lot more weighting if it's coming from an investment manager at NZT who's supporting you and pulling those numbers together.
Well, okay.
And then it's up to you to, tell the story that the bank needs to hear to get to the next stage of unlocking some cash for the company.
Yeah, nice. Good presentation skills.
Yep, just keep smiling, tell them about the potential, keep saying you're almost there.
We're almost at the top. Yeah. I mean, the top of the mountain, almost there.
Oh, man,
that's correct. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I wish that there was a it would have been funny to do. I don't know if there was what sort of test it would be, but to do a test of your anxiety level before going into business versus doing another test sort of 3 years into it to see what the difference is.
Yeah.
Because I can honestly say that the things that might have upset me sort of 3.5 years ago and upped my levels of anxiety.
Yeah.
But there's just nothing now. It's just man.
That's little now to me.
Yeah. It's just is the house on fire? No, not yet. We're good.
When you're falling, you're like, have I hit the bottom yet?
Yeah.
I'm still good. I'm still falling.
Yeah. Well, maybe I don't want to see my anxiety level. So, but that's funny because, the stuff you would have sweated over in the past is, it's not really that big a deal, and it all comes down to perspective at the end of the day.
Yeah, man. Hey, what do you think Māori and Pasifika struggle with talking about money?
Why do I think?
Mm.
Yeah, mm. I think it's just because it's become culturally acceptable, and it's something that we've learned from our parents, and our parents learned from sort of their grandparents and so forth. So it's, I don't know the origins of where and how that came about, but it's just something that you don't do, you don't talk about.
Yep.
And which is quite sad really, because we want to see our Māori and Pasifika who are successful, and what did they do to become successful, and what does that look like in monetary terms? Why not? Yeah. Versus some of the challenges that we've learned around kind of, when things go wrong with some bad investments as well. We need to elevate that story too. So it'd be great to be able to get to a place where everyone feels comfortable about talking about finances and money and things like that, because it's really important. And I think it will change.
Yeah.
You know, and like with platforms such as this and more people talking about it, we can normalize it.
Yeah.
But it's going to take time. I'd love to see something happen within kind of the schooling system, you know, particularly that sort of intermediate age group where they're transitioning into high school.
Cool.
So they're becoming sort of little tattoos at that kind of age, and that's where we can sort of get in front of them and teach them about these things, and hopefully it provides sort of the those kind of foundational skills that will help them to thrive in future.
Yeah, yeah. Man. What money mistakes have you made?
Jeebus. Money mistakes.
Yeah, yeah.
What's an example?
Like maybe a bad investment or... spend too much money on shoes or clothes or...
Oh, I've become pretty good on...
You invest in KFC too much?
I'll tell you one of my most recent. So, how like most investors would tell you not to... tell you to spread your sort of wealth and diversify your investments. I've gone the opposite now, and I've put all my eggs into one basket. So I've invested everything into Waimanuka, and what everything looks like is borrowing, savings, banker mum, and I've just like literally sold my house. Like it goes unconditional today, or a rental home. I've got a rental home in Wellington.
Wow.
And why this is a...
all in.
Yeah, all in. Why this is quite a funny sort of money story and one to learn from, I guess, is... So six weeks ago when I was kind of going through the mindset of selling my house, I approached a real estate agent down in Wellington, and then she came back to me and said, oh, you know, look, it could go between, because it's a two-bedroom little apartment in Wellington in Eastbourne.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, quite a nice spot. Nice.
It's a great spot over there.
Yeah, yeah, it's got great views over the harbour. And she came back to me and said, you know, like the market's still quite tricky. I can see it going for between sort of 520 and 570. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, cool. Well, that's the benchmark. At the same time, she just notified my tenant. And the tenant came back to me and said, oh, hey, yeah, look, I'm really interested in buying this for 510. And then I was just like, oh, no, we're going to go to market and see what it's like.
Yeah.
Anyway, fast forward sort of 6 weeks and I'm selling it to the tenant for 510, but it'll be less than 20-odd K commission for the real estate agent. So, I could have, like, saved myself $20,000 if I, like, kind of knew what I know now, sort of a thing. But that's a good lesson for listeners, I guess. But I don't really sort of splash out on anything too ostentatious.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, do you have something that you like to spend money on?
Nice kai. I like eating quality food give me good energy.
Yep.
But other than that, the last few years, it's been no real sort of disposable income to use it kind of anywhere else. Everything's going into the business.
Cool.
Right now. Cool. Yeah.
And so on that note, do you consider yourself good with money? Because a lot of people have good, you know, indifferent, bad ideas of how they think they are, but they might actually be good.
Yeah, I think I'm good now because I've been forced to be good. Okay. So when I was at New Zealand Rugby, I had a six-figure salary role, and I was, like, pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
Had a good life. And I it took me to be in to transition into Waimanuka and to have nothing, to, like, not even pay myself, to realise, wow, man, I was wasting so much of my my income on some nebulous things.
Yep.
So I think I've got a lot better by not having it.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of looking forward to the day of when I do have it to see how I sort of respond, because I think it's taught me a lot around kind of valuing every dollar. Like when I think about Waimanuka, we've got to make sure every dollar counts.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're investing into production or marketing especially, because it's really expensive. You need to make sure that what you're doing in that marketing space is intentional and it's aligned to your strategy. You're not just doing things for the sake of doing it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just burning through cash. And it's really easy to do when you're dealing with a product like Waimanuka, and you just cannot afford to make those sorts of mistakes. So I think it's made me more sort of prudent and careful with what and where I choose to sort of invest now, which hopefully would kind of influence my sort of personal spending habits when the time comes.
Yeah, wicked. It's interesting you say that, because there is this kind of concept called income inflation.
Yep.
like the more you earn, the more you spend.
Yep.
Yeah, like, and I've seen it over the years that when I was a banker, like I kind of, you know, moved from a teller to being a personal banker and then account manager. Yep. I saw the levels of income.
Yep.
Like that, you know, I just got to look after a portfolio of higher people who earned a lot more money, like, you know, $400,000, $500,000 a year. Yep. But I could see there was this kind of correlation between income and spending. And yep. I was like, man, that's crazy. And it's not until people have a project or a goal or focus that they go, sheesh, that dollar has to count for something.
Yeah.
Right? And you're talking about the marketing dollar. Like, I can't just throw it out there, right? Because we've got heaps of money.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to get heaps of revenue. I can't just do that because I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And it has to count.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it's kind of like politics, though. When you look at a politician and, you know, I like to think that politicians get into the that industry to do better in terms of their values and wanting to lead by their values. But at some point, something kind of changes in their makeup, and whether or not it's, sense of entitlement or whatever. Same as business. So that income inflation point. I like to think that because I grew up in small town Whakatane where we still have no traffic lights and I feel way more comfortable rolling around in rugby shorts and jandals that yeah. I'm not going to change too much.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think it does come back to also your bigger why or your bigger purpose. Like ultimately, like Waimanuka is just one vehicle that's going to help me get to where I want to be in future. Like I'd love to think that I could be a serial entrepreneur who brings a whole lot of sort of products and services to market that also have like a social impact, particularly around the areas that I care about, which is like sort of that the well-being kind of wellness space at an individual and community level and something that can impact communities for the long term and at scale. So to do that, we're going to need a whole lot more capital and a whole lot more sort of successful products and services.
Yeah, mate. On that, you know, you talked about, you know, other aspects of, you know, your life and being, you know, well-being. This is a question that I ask most guests is, what does wealth look like to you? Like there's riches, which is kind of like money and like having heaps of money. What does wealth look like? What's your definition of wealth?
Oh dear. Definition of wealth would be the ability to act on choices. Yeah. So I'm happy if I'm eating healthy and I'm in comfy clothes. I'm good. You know, I don't have a flash car or anything like that. Yep. And wealth to me is like, I guess more geared towards being healthy as a person, both in sort of your mindset and your physical makeup, because that is your number one asset. Like, without our health and our wellness, then we can't actually do the things that we want to do or impact the lives that we want to impact. So wealthy to me would be, being able to live a healthy lifestyle that enables me to do more of what I love, which is giving back and helping others. That's the stuff that lights me up.
Wicked. Cool. And final question. What are your hopes and dreams for yourself, firstly, personally, and then for Waimanuka?
For Waimanuka, my hopes and dreams for the company is that it becomes the global brand that we know it can be.
Yeah.
Off the back of securing an amazing strategic partnership.
Wicked.
So that's probably a 5 to 7 year goal, I reckon.
Yeah.
For me personally, I'd like to think that this is the start of my serial entrepreneurship kind of journey.
Nice.
Where I just, like the cool thing about being an entrepreneur, man, is like in a lot of ways you're just following your intuition and your instinct until you find that thing that you can sort of focus on.
Yep.
And I don't know what the future holds, what that looks like, and that actually excites me, but I know that it's going to be something beyond just sort of Waimanuka. There are going to be other opportunities out there. And I look forward to sort of embracing those when they come about. So becoming a successful entrepreneur, living overseas as well, and then coming back home to sort of pass on kind of my learnings and experiences to the next generation, because ultimately it's about helping rangatahi or young ones sort of raise the bar of what they think is possible.
Yeah, mean. Actually, not the last question. Something that you said made me go, how do you make decisions in your business? Because you said something about intuition. And I was like, is it kind of a gut feeling, or do you have a process through you that are filtered through your values and things like that?
Yeah, I think it's depending on the significance of the decision, like if it's a really important decision that needs to be made and it's critical for a whole host of reasons, then I'd look at it from like a commercial lens, and then I'd also look at it from a values-based, like is the mission and values aligned of what this decision could mean? And then lastly, it's that intuition, and I think the intuition, we should never ignore our intuition or our gut, because you know, I've had quite a few conversations with people where I felt like the values haven't been quite aligned and the goals aren't aligned either, and because of that a partnership hasn't sort of developed out of that. So you should always kind of, even though the commercials stack up and people are saying the right things, you should always back what your intuition and the way that you feel, because more often than not, it's going to be right. So,
Mean. Well, Joe, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. It's been an honour to have you on. Thank you.
Oh, Kira Willie, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, man. Awesome.